This is Director Jared Maples of the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness, and I want to welcome you to Season 2 of Intelligence Unclassified. This season, we are refocusing our episodes to better reflect our office's three core mission areas: counterterrorism, cybersecurity, and emergency preparedness. We'll be pulling both local and national experts in these three fields, all in an effort to discuss New Jersey's diverse threat landscape and offer you a unique perspective on the current trends and issues facing the Garden State. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. Please feel free to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow NJOHSP on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at NJOHSP. All links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov.
Hi, my name is Dean Barada from the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. On May 15th, our office held its second annual domestic terrorism conference, where we brought together law enforcement, intelligence, and academic professionals to discuss the topic of domestic terrorism and its presence in our communities across the country and internationally. The series of podcasts you're about to hear are interviews with many of those featured speakers who were there that day. We hope you find them interesting and as informative as we did.
Welcome. My name's Travis. I'm an intelligence analyst at the New Jersey Office of Homeland Security and Preparedness. Today with us, we have Sam Jackson. He's a PhD candidate in the social science doctoral program at Syracuse University's Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs. He studies the contemporary patriot militia movement in the U.S., and he's working on a book-length study of the Oath Keepers that investigates the group's use of American history and political ideas. More generally, he studies the ideas that domestic extremists use to justify lawbreaking and the public communication strategies that they use to portray themselves as mainstream. Well, welcome, Sam. Thank you for coming today.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. To start, can you tell us a little about the patriot militia movement in general?
Sure. So I think of that as an umbrella term that covers a pretty diverse set of actors and groups, but they share a few things in common. So there's a general perception that America is turning its back on the Founders' Plan, this idea that back in the late 1700s, some guys got together and made the perfect plan for government. And ever since then, America has been moving away from that perfect plan that was created. So that's a problem. The second thing that I would say they see is government is becoming more and more tyrannical. This is a way that they're moving away from the Founders' Plan. And part of that is that individual Americans have less and less freedom. Their rights are being encroached upon by the government. And another talking point that you hear from the movement is that America is threatened by enemies foreign and domestic. So the Patriot Militia movement will identify threats outside of the country, but they will also, in particular, focus on internal threats.
Absolutely. And moving on, the idea of threats, how would you define the way the threat militias pose, if they do pose one? Are these types of threats posing violence, or are they more criminal in nature? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I would say that the movement poses two types of threats. On the one hand, you have the threat of violence, which we saw at the Bundy Ranch standoff in particular in 2014. We've seen a couple other incidents like that over the past few years. The movement is very martial in its rhetoric and in its demeanor, so they're not afraid to pick up a gun and use it to defend themselves however they think appropriate. So that's one threat that they pose. They also pose, I guess I would call it a political threat. They sort of contribute to this atmosphere where the government and things like that aren't to be trusted. So on the one hand, this means things like we shouldn't vaccinate our children because the CDC is lying to us about that. And then it goes all the way up to larger conspiracies about the government is planning to implement martial law, round up Americans, put them in detention camps and kill them. So the political threat that the movement poses ranges all the way from things that we might say are legitimate expressions of political beliefs, all the way shading towards violence.
So this spectrum of, you know, small-time conspiracy theories to violence, who does that threat pose? Like, what type of individuals are threatened by these groups?
So there's a lot of potential targets of these groups. The biggest one would be any sort of person who's involved in government, be that law enforcement or an IRS agent or even a member of Congress, something like that. On the other hand, the threats that America faces, according to the movement, also include liberals, leftists, people they would refer to as globalists or collectivists, things like this. They're also part of this wider movement that sees foreign threats in terms of organized crime and terrorism, especially jihadi terrorism. But with the Patriot Militia Movement's emphasis on each individual being responsible, at least in part, for their own defense, the movement really wants individuals to step up to combat organized crime and global terrorism.
Your research focuses on the role of conspiracy theories within these militia movements. How does that rev up the individuals who are joining these groups and continue to bring them back to each and every meeting or to carry out violence or criminal activity in the name of this conspiracy theory?
Sure. So conspiracy theories sort of feed off a few things, one of which is this general sense of distrust of groups and organizations that have traditionally been seen as authoritative sources of information, be that government, media, scientists, things like that. So once people begin to buy into conspiracy theories, it's sort of a snowball rolling downhill type of thing. There's a little bit of distrust, and that gets encouraged as they continue to buy in more conspiracy theories. They distrust more institutions, so they believe more conspiracy theories. And the whole thing sort of ramps up to the point where, at the extreme, you have individuals saying that there's a government plot to come take my guns and to come kill me. I need to get ready for that. Perhaps I even need to go out into the street and start this conflict that's right on the horizon anyway.
So to sum up, what you're saying is these conspiracy theories are really exacerbating the more central problem, which is the distrust that these individuals have in, say, the government.
Yes, I think that's a fair way to think of it.
So the past few years, we've seen some large militia movements, things like militia standoff with federal law enforcement in Nevada, at the Bundy Ranch, as well as in Oregon with the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. Do you see these type of events continuing in the next few years or becoming more increasingly popular?
I would say it's a little bit difficult to forecast, but I'll point to a couple things that might reduce their likelihood and a couple things that might increase their likelihood. So we've seen some policy shifts over the past few months and maybe the past year or so that suggest that maybe the federal government is going to be more hands-off with Western land, try to return some of the public land controlled by the federal government to the states and the counties and local populations. There's at least some conversations about that. If those types of policies are put into place, then I think we're likely to see fewer occupations and fewer standoffs. However, there's still a role for state governments to play in that. If state governments continue to try to manage public land, militia movements who are particularly concerned about land use issues will still be likely to engage in standoffs or occupations. So what we could even see is the federal government stepping back from this sort of thing that might encourage standoffs, but individual states stepping up and doing more of it. So it's possible that we would see a geographic shift in where those standoffs are taking place.
Absolutely. And moving on, how the government, especially the federal government, has responded to militias. Is there any other, you know, laws or shows of force that we've seen from state or federal government to combat the threat militias pose? Or is it really, you know, kind of been the elephant in the room?
It's a difficult situation for law enforcement, I would say, because a lot of militias are careful to make sure that their public activity conforms with the law. And a lot of what they're doing, as I said, is protected by the First Amendment. Their political beliefs are protected by the Constitution. They're allowed to express those thoughts and beliefs. So what that means is that law enforcement and government more generally is put in the position of having to respond when militias do things rather than try to preempt some of these things. I think a very positive development is there were some terrible interactions between right-wing extremists and law enforcement in the 90s, namely Ruby Ridge and Waco. But it seems like the federal government in particular has learned its lesson and is a little bit more patient in terms of standoffs and is willing to let occupiers, for example, occupy a rural building for a month or two rather than going in guns blazing to end things early.
Sam, this has been excellent. And lastly, if you could, what is one good resource you would recommend for our listeners about the militia movement or the greater patriot movement we're seeing here in the United States or globally?
So I'll actually give you two. The first is a podcast made by Oregon Public Radio, Oregon Public Broadcasting, I think, after the Malheur National Wildlife occupation and while the trial was going on. The podcast is called This Land Is Our Land. It's a really good long series looking into the ideas that motivated the occupiers, as well as some of the broader political beliefs that allow the movement to grow. And the other thing I would say is there's two excellent books by historians who have looked at this. One is called American Extremism, written by D.J. Mulloy, M-U-L-L-O-Y. And the other is called To Shake Their Guns in the Tyrant's Face by Robert Churchill. Those are both excellent histories of the movement.
Well, Sam, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Again, all links can be found in the show notes and on our website at www.njhomelandsecurity.gov. If you have any ideas or topics for future episodes, please contact us on Twitter at NJOHSP or email us at intelunclass@njohsp.gov. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe to Intelligence Unclassified.